This is a digital recording of the Senate meeting of September 29th, 2011.
So are there any proxies today? I don't see any. So a few items to report. The Academic Coordinating Team, ACT, which consists of the chairs of the standing committees, so the Senate leadership, plus the deans and the provost, we'll be holding his first meeting tomorrow morning, first meeting of the year. That committee is co-chaired by the provost and me, and it has as its purpose communication among all those people and vision work for the academic division. So feel free to talk to any of the committee chairs or me about what's going on there. The work group called for in the spring resolution on the student center referendum is meeting. We've had two meetings. It's currently working on identifying the impartial third party who will potentially take on the evaluation requested in the resolution. The actual letter requesting such an evaluation is on hold on the advice of the CSU legal counsel. So we're currently working on getting that ready to go, but there's no letter going out. And finally, the conversation about what we want our academic story to be is happening in a lot of different forums. Most recently, was a faculty lunch yesterday with the provost and president, and that was a great discussion. All three of them have been great discussions so far, and I encourage any of you to come to the next one, which is 2 weeks from yesterday at noon in the faculty center in the library. It's a good opportunity to check out the new faculty center, too. So that concludes my report. Any questions for me? Senator Byrne.
Yeah, thank you. Of course, as you know, I'm on the letter writing committee as well. I believe that the issue of the place of counsel's legal advice and the action by the committee requires further discussion, probably not here at the Senate, but in the committee.
Fair enough.
Although I'm happy to talk about it.
Any more questions for me? Okay. So let's move on to approval of the agenda. Are there any changes to the agenda that anybody knows of, or time certains or reports that are needed?
2 minutes for a report, please, if possible.
10 minutes?
Just a few.
A few minutes, okay. I think we'll have time to do that before our first schedule. 3:15, I'm certain. Let's check. And if not, I'll put it at 4:15. So, any other time certain for reports? All right. Is there any objection to approving the agenda? All right. The agenda is approved. So, we'll move on to minutes. I think there are two sets that have been emailed to you, the September 1st and September 15th meetings. So let's talk about September 1st. First, are there any corrections to those minutes or changes that are needed? Senator Brand?
I just want to say that I thought Mrs. Dancing was awesome and did not reflect that in the
session. Okay. So with that change to amend that Senator Lisa's dancing did not offend the Senate?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll remove the entire sentence about dancing? Okay. Any other corrections? Any objections to considering those minutes approved? All right, so the September 1st minutes are approved, and then September 15th, our last meeting. Any corrections or comments on those minutes? If you found anything funny in those minutes, it actually happened. So, all right. Any objections to considering those minutes approved? All right. So, 9:15 minutes are approved. I've received no correspondence. And so, there's a couple of items on the agenda. There's two information items. No, just one. The Academic Freedom Subcommittee report an email to you, so be sure to read that. So I think we can go to Senator Nelson's report now. All right, so Senator Nelson.
Thank you. Just to let you know, I sent out a report on the September statewide Senate meetings on Senate Talk. They were 14th through the 16th. A couple of things that I wanted to just very briefly highlight. One about the presidential selection process. We had passed a resolution opposing eliminating campus visits as a regular part of the interview process. Trustee Lou Monville and Chancellor Reed did come to the statewide Senate meeting to talk to us about that, even though I had a hard time with a lot of what they said. I still appreciate the fact that they were there to talk to us. That's not always the case. And Trustee Monville emphasized the role of the advice of the campus advisory committee upon which faculty have representation. And he and Chancellor Reed both emphasized the importance of keeping names private, because a lot of sitting presidents, this is apparently a nationwide phenomenon, a lot of sitting presidents that might otherwise apply for a CSU position would not do so if their names became public, because they would be jeopardizing, I know Andy, you're laughing, I'm not, they would be jeopardizing their current position. And there are a lot of city presidents that apparently don't want to take that particular risk. I'll let you judge that on your own. The final policy approved by the Board of Trustees was amended to include consultation with the campus committee before a decision about a visit was made. That was about the amount of impact we were able to have. And most campuses, I believe, did pass resolutions, so this was a very controversial issue. The other thing that's going on with regard to presidential compensation, that's been a really hot button issue. We do have a resolution in first reading about that, and it's worded in a way, and it's not available electronically yet, so I can't give you a URL, but it's worded in such a way that it either is neutral on presidential compensation issues, or at the worst can be read to imply agreement with recent increases in presidential compensation. So if that stays worded the way it is, if it isn't changed, I'm going to argue against it, just so you know. I just think it's absolutely ridiculous that the statewide Senate would pass a resolution saying, implying that these things are okay. But that's my opinion, probably the opinion of a lot of people on this campus, I don't know. And the other thing that's going on with SB 1430, this is something that is just the statement was actually made at the statewide Senate meeting, and I'm just trying to get it clarified right now. But one of the associate deans for academic programs system-wide said at the General Education Advisory Committee meeting that with regard to the transfer model curriculum that we're all supposed to be approving as part of the SB 1430 process, if the CSU, meaning a department in the CSU, says no, there's no way we can make this TMC for our department work, then he said that the campus would be asked to find a way to make it work, implying that it would be the campus faculty, some campus faculty curricular body, that would in effect be able to tell the department what to do. I am in the process of getting this clarified. The gentleman's name is Ken O'Donnell, and he's really actually quite a good guy when it comes to faculty consultation. So I'm tending to give the benefit of the doubt until I get it clarified. But I did put that in my report and say that I would pursue him. And if that is the case, I suggested to him that this just might be a violation of the department's academic freedom, and that it would, at the very least, cause quite a stir, and that would be pretty in my opinion. I did not say I would be in charge, but I will. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there questions for State Vice Senator Nelson?
Since you got to spend a couple of days down in Golden Shores, maybe you can clarify from what I just heard you say, that we have to keep the hiring of campus presidents a secret because they would be coming flocking to the CSU because this is so desirable, but simultaneously they have to give massive raises because they're too underpaid. Because those are the two things that I heard you say. And by the way, I also heard the Board of Trustees Chair Carter saying we ought to be happy that we're only doing it in secret, because it used to be that chancellors just selected whoever they wanted. So see how much more open it used to be before they decided to close it down. This is also based on something that was apparently at the state legislature yesterday. The CSU was maintaining they have to give massive raises because they can't get anybody to come, but we have to keep it secret, because otherwise everybody would come? Is that?
No, they have to keep it secret because otherwise nobody will come. Actually, nobody has come, and there have been complaints about nobody coming. Nobody meaning sitting presidents. Apparently, some of those complaints come out of San Diego State, and faculty at San Diego State have been making those complaints, according to the secondhand information I've been getting. And Trustee Monville was actually quite perplexed by, on the one hand, faculty saying, we don't have any sitting presidents, of course, applying for our position, on the other hand, and on the other hand, saying, make the process more open, when the sitting presidents wouldn't apply if the process were more open. And he was literally like, what do you want us to do here?
Okay, at least I was confused about the specifics, but at least there's a good reason to be confused. They basically are talking on both sides of their mouths on things.
There you go.
Thank you.
Any more questions? All right. So we're at our first time certain, which is the Student Affairs Committee report. Senator Madotti.
Thank you. Student Affairs has two elements we wanted to share with you. The first is that given the residential life and the SLICE program have both been moved out of Student Affairs and Enrollment Management and into Administration and Finance, we have invited the Executive Director of Entrepreneurial Services, Neil Markley, to join SAC as an ex officio member because we want to make sure we have representation from the divisions that are taking care of student services, and he has agreed that we'll be joining our group. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing we wanted to share with you is we are going to work on compiling a report of what services and resources have been available in the Student Affairs Division over the last 5 to 10 years and how they've changed.
Are there questions for Senator Madotti? Okay, what's in there now? Yes.
I know I'm coming in a little bit late on the conversation. Why were those two entities moved from Student Services to Administration and Finance?
I could only speculate.
Okay.
Well, perhaps when President Armagnac makes his report, we can follow up with questions to him as well. Are there more questions for Senator Madotti?
Was this change discussed in the Student Affairs Committee at all?
I think it must have happened over the summer. We were unaware of it until it was already over.
More questions? Okay, so let's, we have some time before our next time certain, so we'll go on to standing reports. So, President Armagnac, would you like to make a report?
The potential for further degradation of the state budget increases. Now there is a suit by a group of education groups challenging the on the proposition 98, what they feel was the underfunding of K-12 by $1.2 billion. It's just a legal suit, it doesn't mean that. But there it is. And there's a group of disability advocates who are also challenging a decrease in the budget about $600 million. We'll see what that is. On the question of why there have been this shift, it's strictly because of budget. We have to reduce this year our permanent budget by $9 million. This is a way to transfer some cost out of the general fund into other areas of the university, primarily the housing fund. And that's basically why that happened.
Are there questions for President Armagnac? State by Senator Nelson.
Hello, President Armagnac. How are you? I have a question. question is, it's not about the...
speak a little louder.
Yes, sir, I will do my best. I have a question about the CSU online initiative. And I understand, for those of you that don't know, that's the CSU's effort to get into online education in a big way. There's, if you just Google CSU online, you can get to the, or go to the CSU website, you can find it. I understand that the campuses have been asked to contribute to paying the salary of whoever will be the new executive director. And there are things flying all over on the statewide listserv that at least two campuses have been asked to contribute $50,000 apiece. And if you add everything up, it comes up to like $1.2 million or something. Do you have any information on that?
I hope this was always a piece of truth.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
There is an effort to establish an online CSU online university. I have to tell you, I'm not clear, I'm not sure anybody is, or what all of that means. But campus where originally there was supposed to have been a confederacy of the will, where a campus was would make a $50,000 one-time capitalization investment. We were not among those in that group who wanted to do that. More recently, we all have been volunteered to make a one-time $50,000 capitalization investment of that effort. We now have 23 campuses who are participating and have contributed. By the way, people think we send checks. That really doesn't happen. Simply the money is taken from headquarters, except like a bank would do that. Including in that capitalization would be the salary of a director of the CSU Online University. I think there is a job announcement about it. I don't, but clearly that position is not going to pay $1.2 million.
Figure as much.
Senator Lott.
I have a question.
Can you speak a little louder?
I have a question that came up in the letter writing group that the Senate has regarding the last year's referendum. And there was a quote from the CSU staff attorney that there was an internal investigation. And then we should wait for the completion of an internal investigation of the student referendum. And I was wondering what internal investigation is happening now. What's going on?
I should not call it an internal investigation. But we sent the complaints, the information, the Chancellor received a letter from a legal group in San Francisco, and all of that was referred to the General Counsel's office. And they asked for documentation, you know, a copy of the pamphlet, things of that nature. I'm not sure I would call it an investigation, but we refer that matter to them, and they asked for some materials, and we have provided them. That's what I think.
Okay, so the CSU doesn't have an internal investigation going on.
I just don't know what internal investigation means.
I don't know. It's from the CSU staff attorney.
Don't believe everything you read.
Steve Wilkes.
Senator Sanghaus.
I did want to go back to the issue of some of the conference programs being moved because of the funding issue. And I guess, maybe I'm a little naive, but I'm not understanding why the organizations have to move and have a different report structure rather than the funds could flow in another direction.
So it doesn't work like that. It is, you know, what you are trying to create is greater synergy. There's a number of, there's a couple of people who have retired in that area who will not be replaced. I for one shop growth, etc. Therefore, that work is going to be absorbed by another organization who has, you know, an expanded activity, and with it goes the savings necessary to continue an activity without being charged to the general fund.
I do understand that we have funds, general funds can't be used in certain ways, we do have some of those kind of issues, but it seems like when we look at the organizational structure, I guess I'm just confused why the resources shortfall can't be met by a shunting of resources rather than moving people. And it's probably not the average.
It's both. You remove the resources, but you move the responsibility attached with that service, with those functions, to a unit which is a non-general fund, and with it go the people who are in doing that job in a diminished capacity.
Okay, I guess I thought sometimes funds could come from the donors and foundations into the campus. It doesn't necessarily, but did you have any?
Not to do the same thing. You are basically consolidating and in that, and creating savings of non-expenditures and still doing the same or more activity. But it has to be done under a different approach.
Senator Brown. Thank you. On a different note, I've been told that in spring 12, Sonoma State will be abandoning its telephone service and changing to voice over internet protocol. I'm just wondering if there's anything you can tell us about that. Is there anything faculty will have to do, or for most of us, will it just, our phones will work like usual, or?
I've been told that you would, I'm not that familiar with the technology. We're going to be part of a pilot done by the corporation for, you know, who runs the internet, and they are getting into that business. I understand that in most cases, you won't know the difference. And there still be something that looks like a phone. And in some cases, it would still have to be a regular landline for certain pieces who will deal with emergency, etc. And by the way, in terms of the students, the use of landlines is now almost non-existent.
Anthony, you going out?
Yeah. Dr. Armagnano, could you explain exactly the process of the alternative consultation in regards to the student center?
You know, we have a process. I don't have that information exactly, those details.
Okay.
Soon you will learn that I'm not very good at getting into the details of things. But there's a process we just followed very recently on a terminal consultation for the mental health fee, and it's very delineated in what you do. I think Medical has was participant in that because it comes from the the advisory committee, and we will follow that process and that decision.
Thank you. Senator Hess.
Yeah. Hi, Dr.
Arpaiana.
I've been repeating Anthony's question, but I wasn't clear following on Sharon's comment. If there's no internal investigation, why the faculty senate, which is presumably a sort of separate entity, shouldn't proceed with its recommendation committee?
You need to talk to the general to the council who spoke to Mr. Ford. I was not part of that conversation. Hey.
They
had that conversation with council. It was not me who made that recommendation.
Okay, thank you. I had a follow-up because I know the star or something star, but it suggested that there was going to be a consultation process between you and students. Can I share what format?
That's Mr. Benino's question, and I think I answered a second ago.
Okay, no more questions, and we're at our next time certain. So this is a special report, and we ask the Academic Council on the International Programs to give us a report every year. And so Robert Train and Marissa Thigpen are going to give us their annual report. So well, let's see. Come right in here if you want.
Good afternoon. I'm Robert Train. That's nice to be here. I'm the Sonoma State Representative for the Academic Council on Academic Programs. It's a CSY committee created to promote CSU campus participation in the development of policy concerning international programs and to ensure regular communication between all of the campuses and the Office of International Programs in Long Beach Justice Office. So I've invited our prodigiously energetic and talented coordinator of international services, Marissa Thigpen, to move from her usual role as member of this body to actually correct this report. So I'd like to briefly highlight some of the opportunities for CSU faculty around international programs. This year will be the last chance for CSU faculty members to apply for a Wang Family Scholarship to support study and teaching and research in China, or mainland China. Most applications are due December 1st. Resident directors is another opportunity for CSU faculty to work and live in an academic year in the following countries: in China, France, Italy, Japan, or Spain. Unfortunately, we no longer have a resident director in Mexico, and our Israel program is currently closed due to the request for foreign travel. So that resident directorship is not available at this time. The resident directors need to apply 2 years ahead. So applications will be due at the beginning of December 1st to be exact, of this year for the 2012-2013 academic year. So I'll be sending around an announcement as usual. We'll have faculty with links to some more information on these opportunities. But please feel free to see me if you have any specific questions. So give you sort of the Long Beach view of what I do. Despite the ongoing budget cuts, there's a real sense in Long Beach and the Office of International Programs that Study Abroad does have an important role in playing the education of our students throughout the system. We have had access to excellence exercise in strategic planning that puts that is endorsed by the CSU Board of Trustees. In May of 2008, that puts global awareness of CSU graduates as one of the 8 strategic commitments for the coming decade. We're also moving forward international programs towards a Learn Spanish program in Spain, similar to programs we already have for French and German in Germany. So if those students who just want to go for a year and a half, they're going to start learning language from a rather basic level rather than already have knowing much of the language. I think it's fitting that this is our 50th anniversary here at Sonoma State, and that in international programs, we have taken on significant leadership in international education at CSU. Just this last week, One of our students here at Stone State, Hannah Schmidt, was appointed by Long Beach to serve as a student representative to the Academic Council on International Programs. She's one of only four students selected from among the returning students from all the 23 campuses last year. In April of this year, I was elected by the council to serve as chair of the whole CSU Academic Council on International Programs, and this is the first time in recent memory, particularly my stay on the state, but recent memory that a Sonoma State faculty member has held this position. International Programs will also celebrate its 50th year, but in 2013, just 2 years after Sonoma State, although I know of no flyover plan for international, I think it's going to be more of a satellite shot. Right? But it would capture the 63 students that Marissa is going to tell us about in a moment. They're currently studying at Sonoma State abroad, as well as the almost 600 CSU students studying at various universities in 16 countries across the globe, not to mention thousands of international programs and alumni over the last 5 decades. So in a sense, CSU International Programs and Sonoma State have grown up together in these last 50 years. In International Programs, has been a vital connection to the transformative educational experience of our students here on this campus. Just to share a few student portraits, some anecdotal evidence from some of my students, Leah Getkin took Spanish classes at Sonoma State before studying for a year in our Granada, Spain program. When she came back to Sonoma State last fall, she worked with me in the Language and Culture Learning Center as a peer language facilitator with small conversation groups who were beginning Spanish learners, like she had been just a few years before first arriving at Sonoma State. Today, Leah is enrolled in a single-study teaching credential program, and while on her way to becoming a high school Spanish teacher. Karen Baniagua, a pre-business and administration and Spanish major, grew up in California, the daughter of immigrants from El Salvador, and she studied for a year in our program in Chile, where she has gained a truly global perspective on herself as proudly bilingual and educated. She's a French herself. These are just several of the truly transformative educational experiences of living and learning in other cultures and languages for an entire academic year in Africa, Asia, Europe, in these high-quality academic settings, often among the best in the world. So with that, I'll briefly turn over the session to Marissa.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm sorry I was late. I was trying to make copies and coffee machine jammed, so you may have to look on the partner, but I do plan on sending a little PDF and some paper, so get a PDF version of it. The first thing I want to pass out is the system-wide numbers. I know that interests everybody. You kind of see where we're at in comparison to other campuses, so I think I have enough to leave, so you're welcome to. And you need to see, if it comes to you, that we are the number two campus in the system. I think we're all aware of that, and that's maintained. We're behind San Francisco State. Per capita, we are the highest campus, so we're very proud of that fact. So we can see that. If you come to go to the bottom column, our school is SO, Sonoma, second to the right. The 74 students are currently abroad right now. It's actually 63. My numbers are more current than the Shepherd's office numbers. We've had some drops, so 63, not 34. I also kind of want to explain, the more students we invite to the information meeting, obviously more students will go abroad. So this past year, we had 410 students attend the info meeting, 178 attend the application workshop, 78 attend the application and the interview process. Those of you who are on the interview committee, thank you for that. 72 were accepted, 72 accepted of 78, that's 92.3% acceptance rate, so we're doing pretty well there. 6 were denied. Of those, 5 were placed on our NSC program as their second choice, so we've worked with them to find a good placement for them for NSC. 3 were internationally placed for NSC, and 2 were domestically placed in Massachusetts. So 3 of those students, we were able to take advantage of study abroad programs of our NSC partner institutions. So if you think of it that way, only one student of those 78 applicants was not placed. Pretty good. That's 96, 97%, something like that. So again, good. Right now, 63 are currently abroad through CSU. Our new program that we brought on board last year is really growing popularity, National Student Exchange. I think you're all probably aware of that. It's a domestic study with about 200 universities across the U.S. And that is an IRA-funded program, so if you IRA-funded that program. We're the NSU students who are abroad and domestically, you can call that the way on the program. And this is sort of by the school. So you can see kind of where your school is, if you are committed, number one, if you're presenting students, school business, school of social science next, and there and see the numbers. On the back side, also, the last page, you'll see our international students here at Sonoma State, which are many of your interest in that. You can kind of see what major their undergrad grad, which countries they're coming from. So I have, may not have enough of these, this is where the jam was created, so it was front back, but I'll turn it out to the PDF. So definitely feel free to check that out. If you see some discrepancy, let me know. This is from my database, so it is as good as it gets in terms of my data. I did want to thank those of you who were participated last year on the interview committee. I know it was extra time, we're not being paid for it, but that thank you letter does the trick for you. I really appreciate that, because that's kind of all I can do for you. But if anybody's interested in getting more involved in that way, if you're looking for more on how to interview. One of the big announcements we have is the deadline has changed, and I've yet to really push the marketing at this point because we've been working with the fair, that was Tuesday. So my next big push would be the deadline change. It is changing from February 1st to December 15th. So that's a full 6 weeks earlier than it's ever been before. And it's also a different year, also finals week. It's also a semester. So we found out about this probably 3 weeks ago. I was informed that the deadline had changed. So we're kind of jump to and make it work for students. So we had to change a lot of our handouts, a lot of what we were able to do to manage to kind of go with it. So know that your students do have a different deadline. Recommendation forms will say December 15th, so it is much earlier. So I would like those by the end of the final week if possible. Letters are not required, so please don't, you know you're very, very busy. You do not have to do a letter, it's just a form. That's really all I need. So a couple, two, three, 5 minutes is really all we need. So students are becoming more aware of that, but that's something I wanted to know here today. There are some benefits to students for the moving up of the deadline. Getting their visa to spring is incredibly difficult for some of the countries, so that's going to be easier for the students. Ticket flight prices are going to be cheaper a little earlier. There are alternates, usually don't find out until June if they're going, so the alternates will actually go sooner this semester. So there's a lot of benefits for students all around, so I have no problem with that. It's just a good change of process this year. That will be the new deadline for that one. So, getting more involved, I'm looking for more involvement from faculty always. And some of you have maybe received this classroom presentation request in your mailbox. If not, go ahead and grab one. So we're trying to do as many presentations as possible. There's a great group of international and domestic students that work in our office. So they're out there doing presentations. We're going to be preparing for students who have done other programs, or myself, or our MSC program assistant. International Education Week is also coming up in November, the week of November 14th or 18th. So you'll be hearing more about that. We'll be doing different country panels and different sessions on different things. We're looking for faculty involved in that as well. We have a Facebook page. We're telling you, I'll just post that to the kind of list if you guys can like our Facebook pages. We do a lot of stuff on Facebook. So if you have any questions, you can email that from. I'm happy to talk to you about how you guys can play your Facebook form with your students, because it's really kind of where they are in terms of marketing. So we also have a newsletter that comes out. How many of you have been getting a newsletter on Mondays? Okay, good. So I've added a bunch of you to the newsletter, and I hope to add everybody here to sign it. So that's the select newsletter. It's all of the things that our office is doing, your Fulbright deadlines, and score and financial meetings, and all the different things that we're involved with. So if you're interested and you don't have that newsletter yet, just hit me down in the newsletter list. That's kind of a one more request to you all. We've created these kind of little tear-offs for your offices, so if you want to use that in your office bulletin board or in your office department, we really appreciate it. And we'll tear out the information meeting time, so that's kind of one last handout. And thank you.
We have time for about two questions, and there's a house.
So, Mark, can you help me get the word out for the deadlines and that's something to apply for? Is there other things that we as faculty can do to support the students who end up going abroad? Is there something that we do about it that we teach that might be able to make them better candidates out there?
I guess just mentioning as much as possible, kind of sprinkling it throughout your entry, developing, sprinkling throughout your lectures, what does international education do for you when you're graduating, career opportunities, which is what organizations and companies are looking for, for global citizens, to speak more languages, et cetera, et cetera. So any of that that could come from someone else than just me would really be great.
So I was wondering if you hear what were the hardest things that maybe on your page were trying during the years getting ready for the kinds of things that you have that are going to be able to get at.
Yeah, the lower
division
courses,
we find that everybody knows. I'm going to find my average here. I think there's a need for an institutional conversation about just how to do the sort of things you're saying, how to connect our curriculum to send students throughout a globally focused education, at least globally oriented education. You currently have no real leadership in this area. Marissa, thanks to her wonderful work, really makes it happen. But at an institutional level, I mean, I do those courts advice and Senate here. We currently have no standing committee that deals with international education. That fits the stars of this over the years, tax courses, committees, and so forth. We have been going for a while, but I think there's a real area of leadership, especially from our senior national officer that has mandated that unfunded mandate from the chancellor's office. But that position, I don't know who occupies that now, honestly, and we certainly should have leadership around that position as well. So there's a lot of good work to be done, and I'd like to see this body get involved with it.
So this is a much bigger conversation. I'm going to take the brief comments from the two people who are on the speakers list, and then we're going to the next time service. Is that early?
I just wonder which of these programs, or which of these programs, students have to speak the language before they go home?
Advanced language programs, Paris, France, whole programs in Spain require advanced language, Chile, and that is it.
And Senator, Bass.
I noticed that of the matriculated international students, almost a third in the School of Science and Technology field, but only two. This is that I see the study abroad of applied technology, and I was wondering, maybe it's a discussion they have, but perhaps you could come and talk to our school about how to improve the study abroad portion. How would
we? So we'll follow up on that suggestion. Thank you, Robert and Marissa, for the report. I'm quite excited that Sonoma State is providing about 10% of the CSU's overseas participants. My students who have participated in the CSU study abroad, come back transformed, and my study abroad experience in college was absolutely transformed. So, thank you. All right. So, our first business item is a motion to change the name of the Gender and Sexual Health Stakeholders Exploratory Work Group. And before I turn it over to Senator Romsberg to introduce this, I'm just going to talk about the parliamentary procedure here. The motion is what's called a motion to amend something previously adopted. Nice descriptive title. And so this was a resolution we passed last spring establishing the work group, and this is a proposal to amend the name of the work group established by that resolution. Senator Rumsfeld.
Thanks. I want to point out that the paper that you got in front of you is the correct sort of two sides to the two different proposals that we're going to be talking about. Relatively minor typos were fixed, but in any case, it's two separate proposals. So the first one then, the work group certainly appreciates that the Senate, I think, very thoughtfully and correctly narrowed the scope of what was originally proposed to the Senate as the Diversity Stakeholders Exploratory Work Group to something that more closely resembled an emphasis on gender and sexuality, with a recognition that they operate in intersection with concerns of race and class, but that this was predominantly about sort of focusing on how issues of gender and sexuality were being addressed through the Multicultural Center and other aspects of diversity programming and leadership on this campus. As that conversation went forward, we landed as a Senate on gender and sexual health. The work group at its very first meeting expressed concerns that we continue to have that sexual health is too narrow in the sense that it doesn't actually speak to the expansive description of in the charge itself, which is also attached here. It relates to sexuality as a field of social and cultural power, identity, and diversity and inclusion in terms of our need for secure funding, services, space, and programming. That it seems to overemphasize the issue of sexual violence, which is just one component of the much larger set of issues that we were talking about. Much of the programming about sexual orientation and gender in their intersection with issues of race and economic status far exceed the label of health. And that the student, even the student advocate position, which was the victim's advocate position, that was the crisis advocate position before being hired as the student advocate position, the crisis advocate position, even that position is about harassment, discrimination, identity, and community as much as it's about violence, sexual violence, and trauma. So, for all those reasons, then, we would like to have the name changed from sexual health to sexuality stakeholders. And then to the final point that I make here, sexuality actually, within sexuality studies, within LGBT studies, within student services and diversity programming, is used much more commonly to speak to these issues than sexual health, which is a much more narrowly focused concern that isn't the focus that's described in the charge that was given to us by the Senate.
All right, so I'll remind you this is a first reading, so the purpose is clarification and suggestions for improvement. Senator Sands. Senator Estrada. Can you speak up, Mike?
I applaud the work of this work group, and I'm in support of this motion. My question is, could I please know the names of the members of the work group, the task force? Who's on this group?
Sure. I don't know if I can actually give you the names of everybody off the top of my head. I'm embarrassed to say we've only met twice, but in fact, I know that I can't. I can tell you that we have, and I apologize for that, we have two current student representatives, one of them being the Kimberly Leas, the diversity senator. We have the a representative of the student union, Peter Neville. We have several different representatives from different parts of administration, including from administration and finance. Not at the director or above level, but we have several different staff people, including Sandra Shan. And we have
Let me suggest, Senator Roxburgh, that I include the list in my next update to faculty.
Okay.
I'm sure that
thanks. I'm having like one of these Oscar moments when I'm afraid that
I'd like to request that the issue of membership of the committee is not what's before us, so I'd rather not have a discussion about who's on the committee, if that's okay with people.
Point of information.
Point of information,
sir.
Point of
information. The draft copy of the resolution just could be on the computer. In your next year's caption, the name is
the different positions that need to be mentioned. So thank you for asking it, because there is one sort of question about it, which is that I'm the standing chair, and the charge of the Senate actually asks that there be a designated co-chair that's appointed from academic or from the level of the provost or vice president, and we haven't seen that yet. So once Chuck Rose left, we don't have a co-chair from administration at this moment, and I'm
All right, Senator Brandon.
Moved to waive the first reading.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to waive the first reading. Is there any opposition to waiving the first reading? Or is there any discussion? Okay, is there any objection to waiving the first reading? Okay, Seeing none, so we're now in a second reading. So now we're up to pro and con arguments. Senator Sagas.
I would like to speak very strongly in favor of the motion as a witness to the anthropologist who has this sort of thing right smack on the center of my area of expertise. I completely concur, so it's not only the folks in this one previously mentioned, but within anthropology, especially linguistic anthropology. What we call it does matter. What we call it sets the frames by which we interpret and approach it, especially around issues of crisis and sensitivity and all that. I think it would serve all the things I saw us trying to do last spring when we passed this in a rush. I think it better serves us. So that's my position.
So I just want to be clear. If you were on the speaker's list for the first reading, you need to raise your hand again to get on the speaker's list now, because when we move to the second reading, it's a new, we start over. So, Senator Madison, over to you. We're both previously on the list. If you still want to talk, raise your hand again. Senator Nelson, do you want to?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree this sounds like an eminently, eminently reasonable thing to do. You say that sexual health seems to overemphasize the issue of sexual violence. I just want to make sure it doesn't become underemphasized with this change.
Thank you. Senator Hess?
Sorry for the same comment, but I just wanted to applaud all of you for your hard work. It's really extraordinary. And I know that my students really are grateful and appreciate this. Being in the sort of original place on the stakeholders group, I was most concerned with the issue of sexual violence and women on campus. It seems very much included still within this, so I think it's
Senator Larcher.
I would like to call a question.
So the question's been called. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, so this is a motion to end debate and move to a vote. There is one person on the speaker's list. This is not debatable. So all those in favor of closing off debate on this item, raise your hand. Those opposed? Okay, so we move straight to a vote. All those in favor of the proposed name change to the work group, raise your hand. Opposed? All right, so the name has changed. Just in time, because it's time for the next motion to change the timeline in the charge of the same committee. So this is, again, the same type of motion. This is a motion to amend something previously adopted because the timeline was part of the resolution that we passed last spring. Senator Oxford.
Okay. I almost don't want to say this, but I hope this will be simpler even. So we thought that we were going to start earlier. It didn't end up getting approved until the end of the semester. We didn't even meet until the end of the semester. So essentially the timeline then has been changed so that we are going to have an initial report and recommendation at the beginning of spring 12. That's so that I have time, hopefully with the co-chair, to write it over break. And then a final report, once comments from everyone who needs to come through us happen by spring 12. And then this was from the language of the actual resolution, but that recommendations are to be referred to be implemented no later than 2013-14, that essentially gives the president and cabinet a year to develop a plan and implement the recommendations, should that be what they decide to do.
Right. So, are there questions? This is a first reading, so clarification and suggestions for improvement. Senator Kermans.
I just have a technical question. And if one, you have a deadline in the fall semester 2011, and that's not the rule about the end. And five, you've got, the Student Center will set over summer 2.0. Is that on hiatus? Is that in some way going to affect your timeline?
That's a great question. I don't think so. It won't affect our timeline. Essentially, the Multicultural Center has, and as housed either at the Union now or at the new Student Center, is an ongoing part of how this funding will occur and the space will occur. So if this gets put on a long-term hiatus, we will be shifting to looking at how the current space is either sufficient or insufficient and what immediate plans need to happen. As a work group, we felt that if this was last time we talked was when it was moving forward, that if it was moving forward, that it might be better for us to focus on what was happening then as opposed to spending a lot of time worrying about what's going to happen in the next year and a half in terms of space. So looking more long range for solutions, but again, it will all depend on where we are.
Any more requests for clarification or suggestions for improvement? Senator Reese.
Do you think the timeline as you suggested here will be achievable if there is much further delay in the replacement of Chuck Rose as a commissioner?
That's a fair question, and I don't know. We have a great group of people who are all earnest and doing a lot of really good work, I think. But I will say honestly that I feel a little overwhelmed in this role. So that may be something that we need to reconsider at some point.
So, Ms. Chair, I'll put a question to President Armagnan and Provost Rogerson. Is it possible to appoint an administrative co-chair to this work group within the next month?
I think so. Yeah, I did write it down.
Okay, great.
So, any more clarification, suggestions for improvement? Barbara.
Don's question is one of the people who worked on this proposal. A number of things that were concerned have been addressed, and that's been really exciting. And it seems that a lot of these candidates said in face these issues has borne fruit, but there's still one lingering issue, and that is a space issue. More students have safe space. And is there any way in all of this to try to have that implemented before 2 years from now? That's my concern, is if you're moving the calendar out yet another year because there's a commitment to 3-year funding, that issue still remains unresolved, and I think there's a critical need for students to have a place where they can have conversations where people aren't literally walking through the space while they're having them. So I'm not sure whether that's feasible, but I would hope that there may be a way of tightening the language a little so that issue gets addressed maybe by next fall and the rest of the issues get addressed in the following year. That one may not require as much funding in order to implement.
Should I respond? Or?
Yeah, why don't you?
Okay. Thanks. And I, as the chair of this group, I take very seriously the legacy that you've left in helping to set some of these things in motion. So thank you, Barbara. We have an excellent space subgroup of the work group that is really looking very, I would say it's one of the most productive groups. Sandra's Shannon's part of this group that's looking very seriously at space issues. Peter Neville just recently became a part of that subgroup. But it's been one of the subgroups that of the four different charges of the subcharges of the group that I think has been most earnest in its pursuits. We may want to make that change in terms of timeline, but I'm optimistic that there will be some sort of satisfactory solution.
Pastor Winter.
I move we waive the first reading.
Second. Okay, so it's been moved and seconded that we move on to a second reading. Is there any conversation? Any objection? All right, so we're now in a second reading. So now pro and con arguments and amendments are in order. Senator Buckley.
Thank you.
All right. Let me just point out, if there's nobody wanting to speak, you don't need to do that. But I think, is there any any objection to calling the question? Okay, so we go straight to a vote on amending the timeline. So all those in favor of changing the timeline as presented here, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay. All right. Timeline is adjusted. Mr. Hosford, thank you to the work group. All right. So, now on to some more reports. So, Provost Rogerson.
Two small announcements. Four faculty will be attending the CSUG Symposium and the WASC Assessment Conference in Berkeley. All the costs being covered by the Chancellor's Office, Institute for Teaching and Learning. The faculty are John Confield, Jennifer Lilly, Mike Smith, and Melinda Milligan. The campus participants were selected based on their involvement in the GDE assessment efforts in consultation with the GDE subcommittee. There's also one administrator going to National Links as well. And then a request for the Professional Development Committee. We're still looking for a keynote speaker to sort of kick off our faculty center, if you like. It's probably premature to make this announcement, but the person we're trying to zero in on is Dr. David Thornburg, who is the director of the Thornburg Center for Professional Development. I stress he hasn't said yes yet, but he is showing interest in coming. His educational philosophy is based on the idea that students learn best when they are constructors of their own knowledge. A central theme being we must prepare students for their future, not for our past. He's been voted one of the 21 best speakers on this subject in America. The reason we might guess it is he's coming to Napa to be a keynote speaker at a conference there. We're hoping for a bottle of wine to get into the I'll keep you posted, but if that was to happen, it would be the end of October. I think you'll be able to speak.
Questions for Provost Rogerson? Senator Wilson.
I think everybody should understand that my major concern is protecting the lecturers who are still up on campus. But that doesn't mean that I think that we should be hiring more lecturers. You know, hiring more lecturers, I'm not in favor of inflicting what some people consider to be cruel and unusual punishment on qualified academics. The reason for proliferation of lecturers is very simple. The administration does not provide enough tenure-track positions to staff the faculty. They could. In the 70s, all faculty who were making their living as faculty members had tenure-track jobs. It can be done. All we have to do to get to 2075 and beyond is stop hiring lecturers. Just everybody should be hired on tenure track. What I'm wondering about is the decision not to hire no new hires next year. I understand the reason for that is because of budgetary considerations, but you're not saving that much money. When you hire new tenure-track people, you're going to hire them at the bottom step. There's a little bit of savings, sure, but not the type of money that we're talking about. And so one of my questions is, where did this come from? Is this from the campus, or is it from Long Beach? And is there anything that can be done about it?
No, it's entirely based on our physical condition on this campus. And it's just a one-year freeze. It's not a new pattern that we're going down. We really have to pay attention to the fact that this cut we're about to face in December, we're probably going to face as a result of the trigger, might be a permanent cut. If that's the case, we want to be in an agile position to deal with it. So it's totally based on current budget issues.
In that case, we should hire her now.
I wish. Believe you me.
Further questions?
Back at the present Budget Advisory Committee meeting in August, when it was talked about the potential for the trigger, etc., my understanding was that that the assumption was that the SFR would not rise yet again because there would be money, even if there was a cut, that the already bad SFR increase for this year would not be come about in the spring for a variety of reasons, including that we wouldn't know in time for scheduling purposes. I am now hearing rumors, and that's all they are, that is off the table and, in fact, there will be cuts. Can you confirm or clarify on that?
I think we're still developing our strategy for the spring.
bring it to try and cut classic down so that we don't go over an enrollment target. We have to deal with the fact that we are over-enrolled at this point. The chairs are working hard to put together sensible strategies for the spring enrollment. And I think it's too early to say that it's going to affect any ratios, or I'm not anticipating any. We're hoping it won't be impacting the students by too few classes, but again, everything is being looked at. We're just hoping the students will take slightly less classes and everyone will get what they need to continue on track.
Okay, but so the basic policy as described in August is still the policy we're adhering to. We haven't switched our initial position that the cuts, a second round of cuts, if they come, will not be absorbed through. I realize that the non-retention of current licenses.
That's correct. If the trigger happens and we have to pay out an additional sum of money, that has been taken care of. It will not come out of academic experience.
Thank you.
Senator Bass.
I was over at the new faculty center yesterday, and I would encourage everyone here to go over and check it out. And there seems to be IT person and a library tech person. We have offices there who are available to help you. You can ask questions. There's really nice computers, and it's just a nice space. So I was pleased. I had not been there before. And I had a couple of questions in terms of faculty development. One is, I'm not sure if that name's right, but I believe ORSP, Office of Research and Sponsored Programs, Judy Arno, is gone. I believe, is that position going to be replaced so that there's somebody coordinating sponsored programs? And second, are there plans to replace Brett Christie's position in some way in the Center for Professional Development aspect?
The first question is easier to answer because, yes, that position is being replaced. We're going up the steps right now. In fact, I would imagine within a month we'll be searching for the position. So, yes. Brett Christie, I don't know. I mean, he's taken a sort of 1 year off to go and do other things with the Chancellor's office. I think as the faculty center evolves in some manner to be controlled by the faculty, because it's being seen by the, overseen, if you like, by the Professional Development Committee. And I want to see how that evolves, what the needs of the faculty are for professional development, so that hopefully in a year's time when those needs are identified, because we want faculty to go there and ask for things and want discussion and want help with technology, I would hope that in a year's time we can have a good look at what we need for professional development and then move in that direction. So that one's a little more nebulous.
Senator Sanghaus.
Question for the provost. I would also say that FSAC is watching on fairly closely to the professional development subcommittee reported to us, and so we'll keep watching. Thank you for some of the call for people for the search committee for the director to come out today, so that's nice as well. I was thinking as I was listening to the study abroad program, but right now I don't know exactly where that particular program fits. Is it independent of the affairs now with some of these questions which I'll post?
It
is under student affairs. Okay, because one of the things that I sometimes wonder is how do we do something like that? That all kinds of programs have close curricular impact with programs that we have being in the and then how the students come back in. It feels like something that should stay at least close within our house and articulate it as well as possible.
Yeah, it's a discussion is underway about how to deal with international programs. At the moment, we're doing a very good job of sending students abroad, but we're not doing a good job of bringing international students here. We have a temporary senior SIO, senior international officer. That's Mark Merkel from Merkel. But that's a temporary appointment. We have to send someone down to Long Beach to our meeting. But we're having a discussion about how we might try and strengthen both aspects, finding a target for a sensible number of international students who might want to draw, and also continue to send students to draw. It might mean that we have to get some sort of international committee formed, which is a blend between academic affairs and student
had preliminary discussion on that, but it's still a work in progress. I think it's a canvas. We need to identify, you know, do we want a target number of international students? And if we do, then let's make it happen. My personal view, as I talk to people, is I think international graduate students would be a good goal to go after. But again, I want the faculty to help that. I hope we can come to that decision soon.
Senator Estrada.
Provost Ferguson, at the School of Education meeting that you attended at the beginning of the year, one of the priorities that we voiced was to have a better articulation between the undergraduate and graduate program, because sometimes as a graduate school we feel our program that offers graduate coursework, we feel like the bastard child, and we're not really included in these larger conversations about the university per se. We currently have a master's program in TESOL, Teaching English to Speakers of Other Languages, that was just implemented last year, and we're in the process of struggling because the numbers are very small. Yet we do have a faculty person who's a member of the teaching faculty for this program who has contacts with teachers in Korea who are very desirous of coming here to partake of this program. But there are constraints with respect to visas for those students to come here, and there are constraints with respect to initial funding to help recruit and smooth the wheel in terms of bureaucracy. So as we're keeping in mind this idea about bringing international students here, I would hope that we as faculty and you as administrators are reaching out to programs that are already ripe for inviting and hosting and providing a very rich experience to foreign students.
That's a good point. I take that up. Senator Byrne.
Thank you. I was curious with regard to the year off in which Brett Christie is doing work for the Chancellor. Is his salary paid by the Chancellor's office?
I believe most of his salary is paid, if not all. I'm not sure. I think he has got a requirement to spend sometimes some percentage. But quite frankly, this was all done before I was in the position.
Okay.
Thank you. Someone else. Yeah, I think most of these families coming from the Chancellor's
office. Senator Washer.
A brief follow-up question on the SFR ratio story. Information doesn't flow too well in my constituencies, and what I understand in Arts and Humanities, there are strategies currently underway to have a 15% increase of student enrollment in critical thinking classes. Is this a local decision that does not come through your office, or is this something that is a directive from your office that is not
I think this is coming about because of the revamping of the first year experiences, that Arts and Humanities, the Dean of Arts and Humanities has embraced this and has met with these faculty, and is structuring the first year experience with Arts and Humanities in such a way that there will be an increase.
There will be an increase.
I believe so. Okay. But it's not coming from my office right now.
Okay. All right. We'd like to move on to get to some other reports. So, Gerald Fisher.
Yes. Structuring function. All right, people, nominate yourselves.
Or others.
Someone who steps out of the room briefly. Chucky, comedian, did not say that. We are, as you might know, we recently received a follow-up announcement from the chair of Structuring Functions, Adam Zagwan, and from Holmstrom. We are still looking for some nominees for a couple of positions. However, I can update that memo of the 20th for you. We actually now do have, the hell of this, because that's where we said this week, now only need one more nomination for the Academic Planning Committee, and we need one more for the lecturer position for the Senate at large. The Senate Diversity Subcommittee now does have enough nominations, although if someone else would like to nominate themselves or someone else, you're always welcome. In addition to that, Structure and Functions has received two names to recommend to
estimate for the Copeland Creek and for the Capitol's Planning Committee, but we need one more member for each of those committees, so we're going to defer bringing those names to you, recommending those for the next year, until we've got all of them. But we're making progress for getting here. And let's see, we also got the information from Student Affairs about a little more detail about the faculty member that they would like to have on the search committee for the Multicultural Center directorship position. So that appeal for nominations will be going out really soon, in the next few days. We just have that information, so we can forward it out to you. They need one faculty member. That position would be relatively short, just they hope to get this work done in just a couple of months, but there could be as many as about 15 to 19 meetings you would need to attend, because it is a search position, and so there's a commitment there, there's a time commitment there, but it's over a short span. So if you would like to be on that committee, or you know someone who would make a good candidate for that committee, that would be great. And that, we're also looking for representatives on the Green Music Center University Affairs Committee. These are members that are appointed by the schools. So far, business and econ and science and technology have submitted their members' names, but we don't have and our assembly candidates, I'm notified. But we're looking for one from science and technology and from education. So social science, oh yeah, us.
Any questions for Geraldine Purser? Senator Rocher.
Would it be possible to get some statistics data as to which faculty member or how many committees they're serving?
Oh, you can ask the wrong person. I believe that would be a perilous route to pursue. Seriously.
There's no data without a lot of work.
Let's form a committee.
All right, any more questions for Tara Purser? So let's see. Here. So I believe that Associated Students Representative Burke is going to make a report today in Vice President Rainey's absence.
Okay, we have a short report. On this past Saturday, Jem posted their Sonoma Serves. We had over 500 students participate, and in numerous instances, Sonoma County, there was over 20. And so total, there's over 4,000 hours dedicated to that student. So that was amazing. And we added that on Tuesday, October 4th, ASP is bringing out later to campus. It's sold out. We passed a bill on Tuesday talking about the change of fee. Yeah, the changing of fee about students who have their children enrolled in the children's school and about the ones that have their fees waived, like their AS and IRA fees waived, what fee they should be paying to send their children to the school. So we decided that people that have their fees waived should be paying the same price that faculty pay, since they will be paying it. Oh, wait, no. So I'm trying to realize I'm wrong. Sorry, there's so many options that we talked about. Sorry. They only pay a special registration fee every semester instead of $299.
They're paying $299 as opposed to their IRA fee, which is $150 plus $90 for them. Yep, so it's
$250. Any more questions? I heard one bell ring over here. What was the event that is sold out?
From the year.
That's already sold out, right? All right. No more questions? I see. So move on to the standing committee reports. Senator Estrada.
Yes, thank you, Chair Ford. Today we have a busy day at APC. We welcome Elaine Newman as our EPC liaison to APC. We also accepted liaisons. Self-nominations from our committee for PBAC. I will be attending PBAC, and for the Senate Budget Committee, Susan Moulton will, if the time can be changed to accommodate her teaching schedule, moving it up an hour, and I have an email out to my consensus regarding that. APC has established a Moodle site for our committee that we are using to provide newer members. We have some new junior faculty on our committee. And members who had that historical knowledge, Art Warmoff and Bob Coleman Sinkmark, have moved on in various capacities. And we are interested in making sure that we maintain that historical knowledge through the documents that have been developed around curriculum planning and academic priorities. So we're using Moodle for that purpose. Also, to collaborate as members outside of our committee time and to disseminate information that is in support of our charged activities. By committee resolution, members were charged to solicit their constituents with respect to their top academic priorities for the year 2011-12. This was in response to the PDC report summary being directed to us, one of the subcommittees of the PDC directing some tasks to us as a result of their summary report in spring, and we decided as a committee that in order to address those tasks, we first need to know what our constituents' academic priorities were. I'm happy to report that my committee members were very active in doing so. I can't believe they do what I tell them to do, because I have no authority. It's all pretend. It's all a show. And we now have a draft document of those academic priorities in development, which we will disseminate as we move forward on addressing those priorities. In addition, we're in the process of drafting a white paper that will come out of that APC will take up. That was originally developed by faculty in the School of Ed, myself being one of those faculty, regarding the creation of a vision for instructional technology integration for the campus. We're going to the document will also be collaboratively developed by APC members with input and. We'll be liaison working with EPC on issues about online coursework, et cetera. So the intent of the document is to initiate campus-wide conversations that will hopefully integrate with conversations we're having about professional development and infrastructure needs around technology to further move us in a direction of being able to offer 21st century pedagogy. Finally, through the liaison between myself and EPC, I'll be supporting the work of EPC on revisiting the MOU with School of Extended Ed on course offerings so that we can make sure that there's integration between the two. Thank you very much.
The question is for EPC Chair Scott. So we move on to EPC Senator Kalinske.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I must tell you, we are still looking for a representative from SSP. So if anybody is here from SSP, I think somebody was here, but she's over there. We are still looking for a representative from that area because we miss Lillian Lee's input. Today we took up the first reading of a new major in early childhood studies. We are requesting from that group some letters of support for the various departments and that will be impacted by that major, which led to a really interesting discussion of the role of advising, because one of the people who came from early childhood studies to present the proposal, Chiara Bacigalupa, mentioned that she was currently doing all the advising for the minors in early childhood studies and presumably would be taking on majors as well, which led to, a very informative and lively discussion about the role of advising. And now that Elaine Sundberg is back, I can tell you the true story. No, just kidding. But we did take up that question. We hope to bring it as a consent item to the next Senate meeting on October 13th, provided we get the provided passage through EPC. In the where are they now category, we are going to be taking a look at the 2008 program review by the Liberal Studies Program in Ukiah, and Sandra Feldman has promised to give us some updates in response to our queries from some years back. I understand it's an item that has sort of drifted along like tumbleweed through EPC over the years, so we're going to try to find a resting place for it. And in the on the horizon category, we are going to be taking a look at the next five-year academic calendar, which Elaine Sundberg, as I said before, I can tell you now that she's left, is going to prepare for us, and also, again, reviewing the unit policy for the university. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions? Senator Galinsky. So, back to standards and affairs, Senator Sangas.
Okay, so today we were starting to look at trying to revise some of the sabbatical application forms and also look to see what kinds of hiccups we've had in the sabbatical process in the past. And so that's opening up over the next few weeks. We also took a look at this smoking ban, kind of get some input from the faculty as workers in this area. Hope to get more on that. Coming up in the future, we do see some things, such as the President's Diversity Council came forward with some study questions, and that's opening up a few things for us to be looking at just in a more general, in a more general way. So, I'm close to it for now.
All right, questions for FSAC and Senator Sangas? Senator Brand, you said you put out a call for comments about the students' proposed smoking ban.
No, we didn't put out a call. We at ASA's request, wanted to give input to them on the smoking ban as it's coming forward. And so today we saw the first parts of some of that and hearing some of the first particulars. If people have comments from the faculty's perspective on that, we would like to have us feed into them, student processes that go so fast and kind of move, then yes, certainly send them away.
Senator Galinsky.
Senator Sangas, as a first-time member of the University RTP Committee, are you planning to submit or solicit any input from that committee in your deliberations on the sabbatical revisions?
Yeah, in fact, one of the things this is a talk we made from Frank in there, and so we're forming a smaller subcommittee to deal with those, and they'll also be in contact with Lynn Barner, the Vice President of Faculty Affairs, and so we will be reaching to URTP, and in fact, we'd love to have someone who has some long-term experience from that committee. This is something that we're just starting on today.
More questions for Senator Sangas? Okay, CFA President Perry.
Oh, thanks. I have a couple of, well, actually I have one general The fact finders report on the 09-10 reopeners from the collective bargaining agreement 2007 to 2010 was completed, and once again, a neutral third party, after looking at all of the data, 4 days of testimony with evidence, concluded that the California State University does have the money to pay a modest amount of money to the faculty, and that they should pay the money and should fulfill a reduced, it would be a reduced amount by a significant amount. So once again, we did have a positive fact-finding report, and once again, the university has been found, their argument has been found invalid by a neutral third party after looking at evidence, and once again, the university has decided to ignore a neutral fact finder. Actually, I wish that they had just ignored it. If you go to the website at calfact.org, or if you go to the website for the CSU, you can read both the fact finder's report, the concurrent opinion written by the member of the fact finding committee by CFA, and the dissent. And you will find that they not only did not concur, but there was a level of incivility that is extraordinarily disappointing, an ad hominem attack on the fact finder. Rather than addressing the issue, they attacked the individual. And this is disappointing because the same people, the same person who wrote, or at least signed, the dissent for management is the senior director for collective bargaining, and one of the, there are only two rules that we subscribe to in collective bargaining. One is no smoking, which we're doing okay on, and the other is to the level we can to remain civil, which I think we're doing okay on, but it's becoming increasingly difficult. So I would advise everybody to read the fact finder's report as to why the fact finder believes that there is adequate money to pay for. If, by the way, if you read the fact finder's report, you will realize that the fact finder is not recommending the entire amount of money we requested for 2009-10. They are recommending a smaller amount and a smaller package. Actually, that was proposed by the California Faculty Association because we do recognize that there is a financial problem in the CSU. It's just not quite as severe, nor, I mean, it really is to a substantial degree a matter of priorities. They can find enormous amounts of compensation for new managers making $100,000, say, more than the previous manager put in 14 years. So it isn't a matter that they don't have the money, it's a matter of where they want to spend the money, and that's essentially what the fact finder found. As a result of the imposition of the quote, last, best, and final offer, unquote, of management, which is nothing for the faculty, will you now have a second bite of the apple to take concerted action, because it once again suspends Article 9 of the contract. Article 9 is the part of the contract that says during the life of the contract there will not be concerted action on behalf of the faculty except under certain conditions, and so it has been suspended. The result is that the California Faculty Association is taking steps towards demonstrating our displeasure with management's unwillingness to listen to people who disagree with them, because the people who disagree with them simply say, oh, there's evidence. We think the evidence is valid, so management decides to attack them. So that's our current situation. We did have a meeting yesterday on this campus and 22 other campuses in a webcast in which we went over the arguments for and the situation and the proposals. If you were unable to attend the meeting or you have not heard about the meeting, the webcast is available, again, on the CalFac website and on something called Live Stream. It's only 24 minutes long, so you can watch the whole thing if you want to. There's also been several news reports, some of which are inaccurate. National Public Radio, for example, said that two campuses are going on strike next month. That's not true. But we are looking at concerted action on two campuses in November, unless... our hope is still that at some point the chancellor will actually read these reports, realize that incivility is not actually an excuse for ignoring facts, and will sit down and actually deliver the compensation that the two independent fact finders over the course of 2 years have found that the CSU or the CFA position is a position that is viable based on evidence, and that the CSU position is not viable based on evidence. So that's our current situation.
Other questions for CFA President Merrifield? Senator Watershire?
I may not remember correctly, but some time ago I think I read an announcement from Susan Kashuk that, so since we are now without a CBA, the provisions of the previous contracts still apply or may not apply?
At this point, the entire collective bargaining agreement is in force while we are negotiating a new contract, with the exception of Article 9, which is concerted action. That is in suspension because of the imposition of the 08-09 reopener and the 09-10 reopener. All other aspects of the collective bargaining agreement are in they are in force. And in fact, I'm glad you mentioned that, Helmut, because an additional thing that I should have mentioned is that a letter on FERP for 2012-13 will be forthcoming. It was signed off on last Friday. I will be sending out a copy of the letter to all faculty. And essentially, FERP is continuing for 2012-13. The letter that was sent out for 2011-12 is identical. What it says is the duration will be the same. It will be a five-year FERP. The eligibility conditions will be whatever the eligibility conditions are at the time when the 2012-13 starts. Okay, whatever the contract says, that will be. Currently, that would be the same thing that we have now. If there are changes in the FERP article or changes in the contract that would affect FERP before 2012-13, that the people who signed up for 2012-13 FERP, if they didn't like the changes in the contract, you can remember, you can withdraw your FERP until you start. So that has been settled, and there have been some tentative agreements on other portions of the contract, but tentative agreements have no validity until the whole contract is settled. So at this point, everything is the same and is fully enforceable.
Any further questions? All right. Staff Representative Baker. I'm sorry.
I have nothing to say today.
All right, I'll report. So our last item, since the international programs report was such a hit, we've got three more decrees from Marissa Dixon.
One thing that Robert Press mentioned is he is at the end of his three-year ACLP term, and so if you want to call out to this group, I think he'll be voting in the spring semester. Unless for the next 3 years, so it'll come up in spring, but if you're interested in finding more about the position, please speak to Robert and myself. We can talk about the time commitment and what the role of that position is. But definitely here, I'm interested in the word that is
open. Can you spell out the acronym for us?
ACIP. All
right,
sorry.
It's on the agenda.
It's on the agenda.
Absolutely, thank you. Oh, there's two meetings, one fall, one spring, one's paper by the campus, one's paper by the chancellor's office.
Any items for the go to the order? Yes, Senator Elson.
Before I forget, Mr. Chair, the faculty trustee again has indicated that she's amenable to campus visits. I was wondering if you would set in motion an invitation to her to visit us. She again would prefer to come on a day when there are opportunities to meet faculty in forums like that, Senate meetings or other committee meetings.
All right, thank you. I will talk to you about that. Send an invitation. Any other items? All right, have a good 2 weeks.